Tango Tango Papa 2078, October 14th, 2021.
Have we seen the actual reality of a monstrous crime? Or merely an illusion, the product of a tortured brain?
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening. Tom Wiles here with you, coming to you this evening from Matthews, Missouri. Matthews is, it's kind of a little place between Cape Girardeau, Missouri, and if you keep going south on Interstate 55, you end up in Arkansas, and then keep going and you end up crossing over into Tennessee at Memphis. So I am currently on my way to New Albany, Mississippi. And what does the GPS say? I've got 225, something like that, miles to go to get to New Albany, and then that's a drop and hook anytime tomorrow being, and so then I've got some strange behavior going on my screen. I don't know what that is. It was like the computer was busy or something and the display wasn't updating. I'll have to, hopefully it didn't skip. Usually that, I don't have that problem, but unless there's some sort of activity going on in the background that shouldn't be. But so in any case, after I do the drop and hook tomorrow, once I get to New Albany, then I pick a load up at, the next load picks up at Covington, Tennessee, and then that goes to Mechanicsville, Virginia. And I've been to Mechanicsville, Virginia before, but it's been a while and I kind of forgotten where it's at, so I'm going to have to look and see. But but doesn't matter. That delivers late in the evening on the 17th, I believe. I think the 17th being, you know, like late Monday evening. So, in any case, when did I make the last? I made the last podcast, I think, after I came back to work, after I'd had the surgery. And so I did make it back home, actually, I guess a couple of days. They got me I had a 1 week post-op appointment on the 8th, and I actually got home kind of in the evening on the 6th, so they actually kind of got me back. And then so I had, you know, I kind of had another day, just a day off on the 7th. And then the post-op appointment was at, it was early in the afternoon on the Friday the 8th. And then I went back to work on the 9th. So, and then I've been back at work since. So the post-op appointment went pretty well. They just kind of took a look at my eyes, and to my surprise, she said that I tested 2015 in the right eye and 2025 in the left eye, and that really didn't surprise me. My right eye, as I've mentioned before, has always been more correctable than the left eye. Now, I don't think I've ever tested 2015 in the right eye, so that was a little bit of a surprise. But she said I actually tested better than 2015 in the right eye. And of course, at that point, you know, I'm still healing, and I probably, you know, that goes on upwards of a month before the eye, you know, you have any kind of surgery, or even this cataract surgery, which is minimally invasive. It takes up to about 30 days for the eye to kind of completely heal. And so there will, you know, there's likely, you know, and it's going to depend on the eye, the particular eye, and then the person and what have you. So it varies from one person to the next, what happens. But, you know, there's probably a little fluctuation in the vision. And I had noticed that, you know, kind of early in the day, that my vision didn't seem quite as crisp as it did later in the day. Now, at this point, that seems to have, you know, like, for example, this morning, when I, you know, everything seemed about as crisp as it should be. So, but in any case, I'm, on the 8th, she told me to go ahead and drop the, you know, I have those two eye drops that I was, that they'd prescribed. One was an antibiotic, and then the other's actually an anti-inflammatory, you know, prednisone type drop. And so she said, go ahead and stop using the antibiotic drops, which I, so I stopped that, you know, I just didn't, haven't used that anymore. But she said, go ahead and go from 3 drops a day down to 2 drops a day for a week. So starting the 8th, I just, you know, I used 2 of the prednisone drops during the day. And then, so I've done that. And then I guess maybe tomorrow I'll drop it down to just 1 drop a day for a week, and then I stop. So, you know, so I'll put another drop in, you know, because I put one in this morning in each eye, and then I'll do more, you know, before I go to bed, I'll do 2 more drops, you know, one in each eye. And then starting tomorrow, I'll just, you know, maybe in the middle of the day, I'll just do, or at some point in the day, I'll just do 1 drop. And then that'll go for until next, basically next Friday, and then stop. So, anyway, that seems to be proceeding very well, you know, kind of beyond my wildest expectations. You know, so I don't know if they'll get, you know, the right eye, if it's going to get to 20/20 or not. I wouldn't be surprised if it did. But, like I say, it's never been quite as correctable as the right eye. The left eye has just, is, you know, for whatever reason, just hasn't been as correctable, whether it was glasses or contact lenses. Typically, you can correct pretty good, you know, you can correct probably a little bit better with glasses than you can with soft contact lenses. So, in any case, it's that, you know, I have a 1-month appointment at the end of this. I have a 1-month appointment set up, and then that'll be that, you know, until, you know, and then I'll probably, well, I know what I'm going to do. I'll be going back to this Vole division where they did the surgery. And that's where I'll be transferring, you know, I'll simply go there probably at some point a year from now. I'll make that the place where I do the annual eye exam. Because I think it is important to get an annual eye exam. I know, I guess the majority of people don't. And there's a big problem with that because, you know, you think, well, my vision's okay and it hasn't changed or whatever. You really need to, at least, you know, if you go in for an eye exam, they're going to be, you know, using something called a slit lamp to kind of look in the back of your eye. And then also, then, you know, it's really important that you check the intraocular pressure. Because your eye has a certain amount of pressure in it in order to kind of keep, you know, to keep the structure inflated. And in a normal eye, you know, you're going to have a normal pressure, but the problem is that, you know, and it's really hard to say why people develop glaucoma, but they do, and glaucoma is basically high pressure in the eye. And the problem is that you can't feel the high pressure. It's not creating any kind of pain, but it does cause nerve damage in the back of the eye, and typically people, it happens so slowly, the brain sort of compensates for it. It affects the periphery of the vision first. That's what it kind of kills off. And so, you know, the brain kind of compensates for it, and people don't really notice that they don't have any peripheral vision loss, you know, unless they're actually having their vision, you know, kind of tested, and somebody's actually looking in the back of their eye and looking at the nerve, making sure that there's no nerve, because they can actually see the nerve damage once it's occurred. And then the problem is that if you end up with a pressure-induced nerve damage, the nerve damage is permanent. It, you know, then you're just stuck with whatever vision loss, and then, you know, whenever they catch the glaucoma, then they'll, you know, they have a variety of treatments, including eye drops and what have you, to keep the pressure down. But you really have no way of knowing what the pressure is unless you're testing the pressure. You know, and there's, you know, if you've been to an eye doctor, you know, an optometrist or an ophthalmologist, you know, they test it. One of the ways, the older ways, would, you know, like the puff of air in the eye, and then it kind of measures the pressure that way, the device that they use. And then, you know, a more sophisticated way is that they, you know, they don't have to do the eye puff test, but they have basically a handheld device that they can hold up to the, you know, to each eye and just press a button, and then it gives a reading of the pressure. And it's, you know, without any kind of eye puff, you know, with air, you know, with an air pressure puff. And that's actually an easier way, because I don't know, the eye puff thing is kind of awkward, you know. So, although it does work, it is functional. There's a really good reason that you should get your eyes tested. Go in at least once a year. I was talking to this guy the other day. Oh, I haven't been to the eye doctor in 10 years. Well, he's probably going to be fine, but, you know, he could, you know, you just never know. You know, it's kind of like blood pressure. You know, I've never had any high blood pressure, but, you know, years ago I bought one of those wrist monitors. You know, they're inexpensive. You buy them at you know, a place like Walmart or Walgreens, about $45 or so, and you get this wrist monitor, and just periodically it's a good idea to test your blood pressure, see what it's doing. Because that's another thing, if you have high blood pressure, you don't know it. You have no way of knowing it. It's kind of the same way with high blood sugar. I think everyone should, you know, glucose monitors are so inexpensive. You just go to Walmart, Walgreens, especially Walmart. You just buy this, you know, the device with the test strips and what have you. Really inexpensive, and just, it's a good idea to periodically test your blood sugar, see what it's doing. You know, and I think some people are afraid, they don't want to know. I think that can figure into it. They would rather not know if they have this idea that if they don't know, that what they don't know won't be able to hurt them. Well, in the case of high blood pressure, in the case of high eye pressure, or in the case of high glucose levels in your bloodstream, what you don't know is hurting you. You know, so in any case, but so far so good with the surgery. I would do it again in a second. And the trifocal lenses are amazing, just absolutely amazing. Because I don't need the reading glasses anymore. Have no use for them. I don't need them. That's an amazing thing right there. One of the things it does, it makes me more efficient with my time, because prior to this, if I was wearing my contact lenses and I was constantly, I'd have to have the reading glasses kind of hung around my neck. And then, if I was wearing a t-shirt, or maybe if I had a shirt on that had a pocket in front, then I'd have to put the glasses in the pocket, and they're on and off, on and off, on and off. And then if I was wearing my regular glasses and not the contact lenses, same deal. Like if I was doing paperwork, constantly taking them off, putting them back on. Either propping them up on the top of my head or hooking them on, around my collar, or laying them down somewhere. So no need to do that anymore. I can just see. It's amazing. It's absolutely amazing. So I did make when I was home, before I went back to work, the Saturday, I did go ahead and I did put up a video. I made a video, and it ended up being about 33 minutes and change long, something like that. I put it up on YouTube talking about my experience with the lenses and, how it's gone. And, and then I posted that to YouTube. Was going to post it to Facebook, but then for some reason Facebook, I think the video is too long, or I tried to a little bit to post the video. Supposedly you're supposed to be able to post a video that's that's up to 2 hours long, but I don't know how you do it, because I couldn't get it to do it. I think that video, or they're trying to do the TikTok type thing. That's what they really want you to, if you're going to put a video on Facebook, that's what they really want, is some kind of a stupid TikTok type video. So, and I don't think people, I don't ever really watch videos on YouTube, or I'm sorry, on Facebook anyway. I just kind of scroll through them, and if it's really annoying if you're in a public place and then the video starts to play, so that's, I don't know. Facebook really isn't a good place for videos, I don't think. But I guess, some people may beg to differ, I don't know. But in any event, there seems to be a lot of, there's tons of videos of clinics. They've put this stuff up about the multifocal lenses, and then you get some of the doctors, some of the people say, well, people that drive shouldn't get multifocal lenses because they may see some visual artifacts at night. Well, have I seen some visual artifacts? A little bit. It's really interesting, because I don't always see them on all the lights. I only see them on certain lights, there's certain lights I'll see rings around, and it's really interesting because it's not all lights, and it doesn't necessarily depend on the intensity. It may have to do with the angle. It's really, really an interesting thing. And of course, when it happens, the reason it happens is because the multifocal lenses are using concentric rings in order to produce ad powers. to the basic lens. So the center of it is for distance. The very center of the multifocal lens is for distance, and then you've got these add rings, these concentric rings that add power. So, you know, like one for intermediate and then one for close-up vision. And so looking through that, at the right type of light, I see this ghost, you know, kind of a ghostly image of the rings, of that ring structure. And the reason that is because all three rings are focusing light on the retina at the same time. But it, like I say, it doesn't necessarily, it's kind of inconsistent. But otherwise, I just see, just see the lights and not necessarily rings around them. So it's interesting, and then if I do see the rings, it's, you know, it doesn't distract me at all. I'm able to see better, you know, just as good or better at night than I did prior to this. And I really didn't, you know, a lot of people with cataracts complain that the cataract kind of ruins their night vision. And in my case, it didn't really seem to, but, then again, I've spent thousands of, God knows how many thousands of hours driving at night, and so I've gotten used to driving at night. I think some people, even if they've got normal vision, don't like driving at night. You know, there's some people that end up just kind of being deathly afraid of driving at night, and so I think maybe to a certain extent it's just more of an anxiety thing than it is anything else. I don't know. But I do seem, I'm seeing better than I have in, years, really. So, now I have I think in the last podcast I mentioned that I had a second voice file from Joel. And so I'll be playing that here in a bit. I might have listened to the first part of it, but now been since the last podcast, so I don't even remember what he was talking about. So we'll be, whenever I play it, we'll be listening to it together. And then I may end up, stopping and commenting on it. But before I do that, I want to just kind of think out loud a little bit, and this is primarily for my own benefit. A lot of people, and this would include me, a lot of people say, because lately I've been talking about, even though I've started receiving the Social Security, I'm continuing to work full-time. And the reason that I'm continuing to work full-time is I really believe that you have to have meaning in your life, in your existence. in order to have a meaningful existence, I think that really revolves around doing something that you can do that's useful for other people. And now there may be some other things that you could add on to it, but I think that is the primary thing that can actually give meaning, that can give meaning to existence, is doing something that you're good at for other people. And then you can know that you got proof of it if you get paid for it, is what I've said in the past, and I still believe that. But I've also, before this, I thought, you got to stay busy. Because the cliche retiree is sitting there and they retire from their job, and then they realize that their existence is kind of empty, and they think, well, I'll have time to watch television, or I won't have to get up early in the morning, or I can just kind of do whatever I want to do, or maybe I can go fishing or go hunting, or I can do this or I can do that, or I'll work in my garden, or I will, fill in the blank. And I stay busy. And that's basically my dad. My dad has stayed busy. He's always kind of busy messing around with this or messing around with that. And maybe to a lesser extent, my mom. But, and of course they've done the RV thing. They've been retired for years now, and they've done the RV thing, and they, seem to enjoy it and what have you. But I don't see myself being able to really flourish in that kind of lifestyle. I could do it for a week or 2 weeks or whatever, but then I can foresee for myself that it would quickly kind of become an empty existence. So the question that I'm asking myself is, keeping busy with a hobby, busy with this, busy with that, is keeping busy the same thing? Is it the equivalent of a meaningful existence? Does keeping busy bring meaning? And you could say, well, it's the same thing. Well, actually, it's not. It's actually not. You could say, well, you could dig a hole and then fill it up and dig a hole and fill it up and just keep, moving a bunch of dirt around, kind of busy work. Not really accomplish anything except, kind of moving things around. Yeah, you're keeping, that's busy. You're staying busy. But what meaning would that have? And that is an exaggeration, but what is the meaning? Now you could, maybe you could keep busy selling something on eBay, for example, then it was Craigslist, and then now I guess Facebook Marketplace. You could try to stay busy doing that. I've got a friend that's, long since been retired that, he's got land, or I don't know how many acres around wherever his house is, and he bales hay, and he's got cattle, and so he's staying, he's busy with that. But then again, he's actually making more money now than he did when he used to have a full-time job. And he's probably the later part of his 70s, age-wise. So it's not necessarily, well, he's keeping busy, but he's actually doing so. He's actually producing something that's useful. But I think for a long time, I thought that, well, just keeping busy is what, you know, because that's what people always say. Well, I keep busy. I'm as busy now, I'm busier now than when I worked. There's just not enough time. Is it meaningful, is the question. That really is the question. Is that a meaningful existence? Just busy work, keeping busy. And now that I, you know, kind of think about it that way, the answer for me is no. That is not a meaningful existence. So therefore, I'm going to continue working. It's that simple, one way or another. Because just trying to stay busy with something, busy with this, busy with that, you know, kind of, that's not good, and that's not going to work in my case. I know that. So, anyway, let's see. So let's go ahead and start Joel's comment. I think it's about 12 minutes long. So here is Joel.
Hey, John. Tom, Joel here. Just thinking about some stuff here, mostly because these are things that I'm going through at the moment. Some of this is related to the wackiness of COVID. Some of it's related to the wackiness of our failed economic policy in many ways. But, you know, we talked a little bit about, you talked a little bit about in the last show about, you know, restaurants not being able to hire people and stuff like that, how you were impacted because I'd asked. But I'm looking at this kind of from a business perspective is what I'm looking at. My son's car, not that old. It's got check engine light, okay? And I tried taking them to Firestone to see if they had any quick fixes. Nothing really quick. So basically we're at the point where it's time to take it to the dealer. And we do have warranty on, you know, the bigger components. So the best I can get, this is now September 21st. The best day I can get was October 4th, 9 a.m., okay? And so I had asked, but the person that I was scheduling with and the service advisor, how long would it take them to get through it? We're willing to sit there and wait for it, which is usually how I used to do it. You know, I used to just take my work laptop with me and sit in the dealership, wait for them to work on the car. They found the problem, fix the problem, and I was off and going all in, you know, less than 2-3 hours. Okay. Now they're saying it's going to have to sit there for 3 to 4 days. Now it was worse. So over the summer, or for the summer, my Chevy Traverse, which is our other car, had some issues with his air conditioner. Okay. And it sat there for a whole entire week, and most of the time was 3 days just sitting there, not doing anything. All right, so Aaron, where I goes here. So biggest problem is for them has both been employees as well as supply. So what is this talking about? And this is kind of also talking about too, how the words I'm going to use right now have probably been co-opted by the left. There is a thing that I used to learn, I learned in college and some of my business class called sustainability. Now, if you look that part up today on the web, a sustainable business is one that's looking at green things, you know, like reducing carbon footprint and other crappy crap like that. Sustainability for me means you have it in your business plan to completely make sure that your company's business is sustainable if something happens. for example, like COVID, supply shortages, stuff like that. And that's where I think corporate America is completely failing now, is they were all planned. Things were just ducky until COVID hit. All right, or until like a not too long ago, I'm thinking when the Fukushima plant in Japan went down, it impacted some chips and stuff like that. There was a chip shortage again, all right, or something like that.
Let me go ahead and interrupt. I don't know, I've thought about this for a while, the idea of just-in-time, and you've heard me talk about just-in-time now for years. And yeah, just-in-time is great because then you can reduce your inventory, you know, and all of the things. You can reduce the inventory, reduce the capital that you have tied up in the inventory. And in an ideal world, everything just arrives right on time, and you know, everything's just hunky-dory. Well, that's one thing. If just-in-time means... Now, of course, when I'm doing just-in-time stuff, it's with food. Typically, is mostly what I haul, is some sort of foodstuffs. And so they produce it, and then it goes to wherever it goes, and it gets there just in time. And that would apply to the load that I have right now. It's some sort of like a ConAgra Bird's Eye type product. So it could be, I don't know what it is exactly. It's a minus 10 load, minus 10 continuous run. You can probably hear the reefer unit humming in the background. Just humming away. And but it's probably some sort of like frozen pizzas or some sort of processed something or other. Maybe TV dinners. I really don't know. And it's going to a Walmart distribution center. And it'll arrive anytime on the 15th. That's tomorrow. Can't get there before then. Well, I couldn't get it there anyway. I picked it up today, so there's no way I would have been able to deliver it today. It's just too far for, you know, for me picking it up and then try to, you know. So, it has to arrive tomorrow, so anytime tomorrow. And then once it arrives, they'll unload it, and then it. I doubt that they store it very long. It'll probably go out to the stores. Whatever the product is. So that's one product. But that's produced domestically. You know, I came from Wisconsin. Not too far from the Illinois-Wisconsin border. Sort of in the, you know, not really in Chicago, but, you know, well outside of Chicago, but kind of in that area, you know, kind of, you know, with it, you know, sort of within the area of northwestern Chicago, but in Wisconsin. More of a rural area. So, but that's one thing. But then they want to, well, we will do this with stuff that's produced in China. So we'll figure it out so that the stuff gets produced and it gets sent over on the ships, and then it gets, you know, it comes into the shipyards, and then it's, you know, trucked out or it's put on trains or whatever. Then eventually it gets trucked off of the train, you know, out of train yards if it goes that way. And then to wherever it needs to be, you know. And it's going to, maybe if it goes, you know, if it's probably like wheels or, you know, or something like that, or car parts or chips or whatever, it's going to go on, you know, several, probably it's going to end up being transported more than once it leaves the container, let's say. but it, you know, but the idea, they tried to extend that idea, so, oh, it's just in time. Well, that's great, you know, because they can lower their cost, they get rid of the inventory, get rid of the money that's tied up in the inventory, and it's wonderful, as long as it all works. It's called a supply chain. You know, you can have a supply chain that has inventory. You can have a supply chain that's got warehouse storage. But they don't want that. They want to squeeze all of that out, make it as efficient. They're looking at it as a matter of efficiency, make it as efficient as possible. And they can lower their costs. Until something goes wrong with the supply chain. Something's gone wrong. I don't know, you'd say, do you think this was deliberate? I think the Chinese may have, the virus clearly, came out of China. Did they do it on purpose? I wouldn't put it past them. Did they release it on purpose? I wouldn't put it past them. Was it an accident? Yeah, it could have just as easily been an accident, and then they just kept their mouth shut and let it spread. Then you have other people that are probably deliberately trying to disrupt the supply chain. You know, if in the Bible there are examples of stories where, I think it was, I may have this all wrong, I think it was like the city of Babylon, couldn't attack it militarily because it was just too strong. So what did they do? They cut off the water supply, they cut off the supply chain. So in other words, they put the city, it was under siege. And then they just waited for things to fall apart internally, and then it was more easily conquered. And it seems to me that something is happening now that's similar. You know, there's shortages of this and shortages of that, and can't get this, can't get that. Same kind of things happening. I've said for years that people have no clue that the trucks going up and down the road really, people have no idea that those trucks, they think the trucks are just taking up, why did these trucks have to go up and down the road? They're in the way. They're in my way. I hate these trucks on the road. Why are all these trucks on the road? We should ban them. And they have no clue that those trucks are sustaining their existence. Don't have a clue. So I think equally people don't have a clue that where do the car parts come from? Well, they come from the auto dealership. They're not thinking about where it's coming from. It's coming from China. Well, it's been interrupted. You know, or where does this come from? Where does that come from? And I think people still don't have a clue. I think we've lived such pampered lives. Everything has worked so perfectly. And we've just kind of been in a stupor. And now I believe that there are people that are deliberately trying to create put the country under siege. It's not just the United States, but other countries around the world. Sort of create a siege mentality you know, hoping that they can stick the crowbar in the clockwork and really screw things up, and then screw things up enough, and then people will clamor for the dictator to come in and restore order. I think that's the thought. And I think they're trying to do this in a number of different ways. It's not just one attack vector, but multi, sort of like a multi-vector attack from every possible angle. And then, of course, you've got a bunch of, you know, there's a bunch of people that just don't want to work now. You know, because, you know, for various reasons. And then a lot of it, I think, is just, you know, because the parents have spoiled them. They have a miserable existence. And they, you know, when it comes right down to it, somebody with a miserable existence probably wants everybody to be just as miserable as they are. Because it's not fair that they're miserable and you're not. And there's a fair number of them would love to just do, you know, kind of like murder-suicide. Evil doesn't just want to make you uncomfortable. Evil wants to destroy you. That really is its purpose. It wants to destroy you. But it can't, generally speaking, it can't just overtly destroy you. It takes two to tango. And ego, or evil, primarily attacks us as individuals via our character flaws. Especially the character flaws that we want to see our character flaws as... This is good. This is what my character flaws make me unique. That's, you know, and that's the way we think. This is an advantage. Now you go back to the Adam and Eve story, you know, and Adam thought it was an advantage. They thought it was an advantage. They'd be able to they'd take a bite of whatever the forbidden fruit was. The tree of knowledge of good and evil, and then their eyes would be opened, and they would be as God. They would be as gods. But in any case, you know, this just-in-time thing is part of the problem. And then throw in on top of that, if it's coming from, you know, from an international source, you know, of course, a lot of the stuff's coming from China, depending on what it is. And you know, that is really disrupted. So, and then that's a real problem. That is actually a real problem. And then, you know, you throw in the people that don't want to work. That becomes more of a problem. So I think it's probably going to get worse before it gets better. I don't know. It may, you know, it probably depends on what's in short supply. And I think probably things that are produced entirely domestically are probably going to be the least affected by this. And things that have internationally produced components are more likely to be negatively impacted by the things that are whatever it is that's causing the shortages, as far as transportation, not being able to transport it on the ship, or you know, the containers, not being able to unload the containers, etc. And you know, and typically the more complicated something is, the more, like a car, for example, is just, you know, horrifically complicated these days. And the parts are just not going to be available. They're not going to be as readily available. Now, one alternative, you know, if you remember back, it's been some time back, I was having problems with the four-wheel drive in my pickup. It's a 98 F-150. And they kept telling me, well, the part's back ordered. And then they finally said, well, we can't get the part. Ford quit making that part. Well, what about a... And then I asked them, what about a remanufactured part? Oh, they looked. Oh, yeah, we can get that. Not a problem. They were able to get a remanufactured part, and then that solved the problem. Now the four-wheel drive works again. So that's always an option. Possibly is if your vehicle, if they're waiting on a part, and it's not just a labor thing, but if they're waiting on a part, then perhaps, you know, you can get a remanufactured part and not have to rely on a brand new part. Now, if it's under warranty or something like that, that could be a problem, because they're not going to want to use a remanufactured part. But the same thing is happening. I was talking to this truck driver the other day, and he said, I never did ask him what company that he drove for, but he said that his company had like 20 trucks that were waiting. They had the same problem. I don't remember what he said the problem was, but they all had the same problem, and they were all waiting on parts, and 20 of them. So these problems are kind of everywhere. And unfortunately, if you're affected by it, you're affected by it, and there's really not a whole lot you can do. I've been having a problem, you know, but I'm not home all the time, but I've wanted to get an electrician out at my house. And I've had a problem getting one to come out whenever I'm home. You know, and so eventually I think I'm going to be able to do that. I want to get a 30-amp port installed on my house so that I'll be able to plug the generator in and supply the house with some electricity in case of a power failure. Sort of like a 30-amp RV port. You know, and I can apply it to selected circuits to have some electricity. So I'll eventually, hopefully, be able to get an electrician, but those seem to be in short supply, and it's hard to get them. I've talked to multiple people that have had problems with, you know, trying to get a hold of an electrician. Then if you do, it can be pretty expensive. But on the other hand, you need cataract surgery. That happened pretty quick. You know, I'd have to go back and look at my calendar, but it was maybe 6 weeks from the time I went to the... You know, I knew I had it, well, from 2 months, from the time I realized I had a problem, just me sort of self-diagnosing my problem, up until the problem was solved was no more than 2 months. And all I really had to do after I had that initial appointment, then I texted the guy that sets this stuff up, and he said, oh, we can do that as long as you can make the 1 week post-op appointment. You'll come in on the Monday and do the pre-op, and then come back on Thursday and do the operation, and you're all set. And it happened. Both eyes at the same time. Things turned out great. Was that a little risky getting both eyes done at the same time? Maybe. Did it pay off? Big time. It's amazing. Had I done one eye at a time, I'd have one eye that was, that would have came out good. And then I'd be looking at having to go back again, maybe in another month or whatever, get the other one done. Who knows what's going to happen in between? You know, what if they just arbitrarily decide, oh, we're not going to allow any more elective surgeries. Virus is too bad. Oh, my God, lockdown. Guarantee you there were people that were caught back in, when was that, March, May of 2020, whenever, April, whenever they decided they were going to just stop all elective surgeries. Guarantee you there were people that were probably in the middle of getting cataract surgery. They got one eye done and then they were stuck for a while with just one eye being done. So, anyway, I could go on and on and on. Let's go ahead and listen to more of Joel's comment.
Then either prices go up or you don't have product on the shelves. Okay. And what I see, the businesses that are doing well, that are successful now, are businesses that can manage to do all that work with less people. And that's what I think is going to happen. Is it ultimately, you know, like there's lots of talk with regards to COVID about them being short of beds. And nobody ever brings up the real reason they're short of beds, and it has nothing to do with people actually getting sick from the virus. It has more to do with them not having enough employees to service all the beds in the facility. So, I was listening to the No Agenda show, and they played this clip about somebody trying to say, well, tell me, here's the information I need to help the vaccine hesitant. And he's talking from it, not just from yourself and others, they say they just don't want to get it, but from people who are nurses. And I hope you listen to that show, because it actually had a good clip and a good thing on it. Where the nurses who aren't taking it are not taking it because they can't be sure if they take it, if it's actually going to do anything to benefit them. Because they see every day people come in who've had the vaccine who now have the virus. Okay. So, And it was an interesting clip. I hope you listen. It's pretty early in the show, so you should listen to that clip. I'm trying to remember where they got it from. If I did, I could actually send it to you. But it's where we go. With that, when the vaccine first came out, they didn't know about the myocarditis that younger folks would be getting when they take it. I mean, the other nice thing about that clip was it basically is saying, the left is always saying, well, the people who don't want to take it aren't smart. These are nurses. These are scientists that all object to this. It's not always a Joe Trump supporter who decides he doesn't want to take it. In fact, Trump actually told everyone to take it. There's actual speeches where he said to. And then the left thinks that Trump supporters just are the only ones that are not wanting to take it. Well, that's not true. So
let me interrupt once again. Because I've got, what I have here is, that ophthalmologist that I used to work for, God, now it's been 20 years ago. Which is hard to believe. around 2000-2001. He forwarded a thing from apparently Neil deGrasse Tyson, and it's one of these Facebook things. And he, you know, he made a comment, "So true!" exclamation point. That's the ophthalmologist I used to work for. So I'll read the, this is the meme that Neil deGrasse Tyson either, you know, I don't know if he forwarded it or he came up, you know, he probably forwarded it. So I'll read it. It says, "Irony. Using a device that transmits inordinate amounts of complex information tens of thousands of miles through thin air via antennas and satellites to convey to others that you, quote, don't trust science," unquote. And so I made a comment. And, of course, no one answered my comment. But here's my comment. And, of course, he didn't really specifically mention the virus, but that's what he's really kind of aiming at, you know, as people, "Oh, you don't trust science." Okay, so here's my comment. I believe the disconnect revolves around the fact that for at least half of the population, scientific reductionism doesn't render moral values. Science makes great technological devices but fails in revealing moral values or suggesting behavioral direction. Because of this rift in values viewpoints, arguing over where ideas of right and wrong should be derived will never be unified or resolved, regardless of how obvious personal viewpoints seem. And, of course, no one responded to that, and it may have gone over their heads, I don't know, but it seems to me that you have people... Let me move this phone. It's kind of making noise. Move it back over out of the way, and then that way the it's not going to get into the recording. You have people on one side that, you know, they basically discount the idea that there's a creator. They believe that everything happened just sort of, it just happened at random, or somehow the universe just magically emerged and, you know, order somehow came from chaos and, you know, and everything was just perfect and, you know, we have a Goldilocks Earth, Goldilocks Universe, Goldilocks, you know, everything was just perfect somehow and it just, you know, and then they've even come up with ideas that, well, the reason that the universe is just perfect and it's got so many just perfect parameters for human existence is because there's an unlimited number of universes and we just happen to, we won the lottery. We're the, you know, humanity's a big lottery winner. Well, that's ridiculous. You know, try, you know, how long, if you took a bag of, you know, rocks, you know, and throw in as many elements as you can find, put them in that bag, and then how long would it, you shake that bag, just keep shaking the bag, how long would it take for a car to emerge? How long would it take for just a single cell organism to emerge? I don't think, I think if you're honest, you're going to say it's never going to happen. But there are people that, you know, and I think it's primarily because they hate the idea of being judged. They hate the idea, they hate their conscience, essentially. Then you have the other half of the population that kind of, you know, they sort of list, they do listen to their conscience, and they may be tricked into hating their conscience, but they sort of still like to listen to it. And, you know, you are better off, by the way, making friends with it, as an aside, but and they allow conscience, which basically get that your conscience, I believe, this is my opinion, your conscience is God, your real conscience is God talking to you, not forcing you. He doesn't tell you you have to do this and have to do that. You've been given enough rope, we've all been given enough rope to hang ourselves with it, clearly. You know, kind of either literally or say that metaphorically, but we have been given enough rope to hang ourselves. In a myriad of different ways. Or we can listen to our conscience, but we have the free will comes in when we have a choice. We can either listen to our conscience and then we do what's right because it's the right thing. And we have a source of via conscience, which that's God talking to us. We have a source that tells us how to behave. What is the right way and the wrong way? What's the right behavior and the wrong behavior? You can never derive that. You can have all these wonderful scientific inventions, and they will never tell you how to behave. And that's what the disconnect is. And the people that think that everything can be, you know, kind of reduced to material, you know, sort of material scientific reductionism, you know, then dispense with the silly idea that there's a creator, then they can just do whatever they want. Everything's just a shade of gray. There is no right. There is no wrong. And they think they can just, you know, force everybody to think. If everybody thought that the way they did, we'd have this, we'd suddenly have utopia. And they really do believe that. Even, you know, in their misery, they believe, I think some of them really do believe that. Many of them do. And they think they're right. They think, oh, it's science. Science tells us everything. Science will tell us how to, you know, do this and do that. And then it's up to, you know, and as ideas of right and wrong, it's just shades of gray. We can do whatever we want. There is no right. There is no wrong. We can just do whatever, you know, who wants morals? Then the other people on the other side see the benefit of having morals. You need to know what right, you know, you have to have a source of what's right and wrong. You know, it to me, it's obvious. It's just obvious. Science doesn't tell me how to behave as far as morals go. You know, to suggest otherwise is ridiculous. But that's where the disconnect is, and so, or at least that's a major disconnect, and the two, you know, they're never the twain shall meet. You know, so the idea that, you know, that somehow science says that, you know, and of course they say science, you know, and they use that in a knee-jerk way. They react to the word science. A lot of people do, you know, just react to words in a kind of a knee-jerk reaction. And you got to watch for that tendency to do that, because it can happen to any of us, and it probably does happen to us. And then, of course, people fiddle with the meaning of words. Like you were saying, well, sustainability means that, you know, really it means that you can cook, you know, if a business is sustainable, really what that means is that it's got all these contingency plans, and it can do this and it can do that and it can survive. But then they've twisted the meaning to mean, oh, it means it's green. You know, it means you're a tree hugger. It means that you, you know, fill in the blank. We all kind of know how they've twisted the word. They've done that with a bunch of words. I believe that's one of the reasons why language over long periods of time changes. If we went back to the language of that our ancestors from, let's say, 200 years ago were speaking, a lot of it we would be able to recognize, but then there's a lot of words that they used that we don't use, and we're using words that they never, you know, they never used, and some of the meanings of words completely changed. That's why Shakespeare said, you know, he said a rose by any other name is still a rose, because, you know, it's been going on since there's language. And I believe one of the reasons why is because people deliberately twist the meaning of words in order to, you know, I think primarily in order to get rid of judgment. They think they're being judged. They think other people are judging them. And it's really not the other people. It's their own conscience that they're at enmity with. It's their own conscience that they're at war with. And they think that if they can just force everyone to think the way they do, that's going to get rid of the judgment and they're not going to feel bad about it anymore. Force everyone to believe that abortion is good and it's a noble thing to do, and then that way it's just there won't be any more guilt if you kill your child. And of course that's not true. And that's one of the reasons why, you know, giving in to these types of things is a bottomless pit. Because it doesn't get rid of, you know, just, you know, it doesn't get rid of the guilt. It doesn't get rid of the mental agony that people feel. You start playing little games in your mind with words, get people to agree with you that right is wrong and wrong is right, and you see the world backwards. But you're more guilty than ever. You're more miserable than ever. And there are plenty of people that, you know, they may present a facade to the world that, oh yeah, everything's great. You know, I think this way. I'm a, or they can claim to be an atheist or whatever. They claim how great it all is, and you know what a wonderful person they are. And guarantee you, they're probably, if you could actually look at their lives and look what actually goes on in their minds, they're miserable people. That includes most entertainers. So, anyway, let's listen to the rest of Joel's comment.
But the moral of the story is here, like, and what I think, another thing that a lot of people really think about is happening is the companies that are being successful are figuring out how to do things with less work. They're figuring out how to get things. Like a good example of this is now, if you go, it's like, well, kind of too late for most of it now, but if you go into most stores now, I guarantee you, you're going to find a stack of both hand sanitizer, wipes, and stuff like that, some of it from brands you've never heard of until now, mostly because companies who could stand it up and get it done. We're doing it. You know, Purell isn't the only name in the game now for hand sanitizer. There's a whole bunch of other companies out there now too. Some of it is better, some of it's worse. There's certain ones I don't like to use because it leaves my hands sticky. But and usually those are the ones that are like kind of completely alternative from the Purell like formula. So and now of course most of that is all highly discounted because people aren't buying it because I think people are starting to see through the charade. A good example of this, and now I bought this not because I'm wearing masks because I'm not really doing it unless I absolutely have to. But when I was at Sam's Club, they had a Panoptics anti-fog spray for your eyeglasses, and I wear eyeglasses, so I bought some. But they had it, normally it was probably $15, but they had it marked down to like $5 for 3 bottles. And it comes with the microfiber cloth. So it's a good deal. So when people want to blame the lack of things on the shelves on COVID, that's just wrong. The lack of things on the shelves are their inadequate business plans to plan for the unknown. And that's why they fail. They plan for when things are doing all just ducky, everything's good, the economy's great, I'm making money hand over fist. But they don't take some of that profit and then turn it back into shoring up the business to make sure that if something does happen, that the business can continue. Now, there is one thing that I will say that if you look at the term business sustainability on Google, there's one thing in the super green definition of that that is right. Communities, and otherwise known as people, don't care and will remember when you can't serve them. And they were going to go somewhere else. And if they can be served by that someone else, they will recommend that someone else. So if your business can't serve the community it's trying to serve, you're going to go out of business. I never know. Like, generally, I can't find a restaurant around here that's not a typical sit-down restaurant that I can actually get a seat. But then I run into like my old Charlie's. I've always been able to get a seat. Sometimes the wait has been a little bit longer. It just depends on what time of day you go. But generally, I've gotten served and I've usually was able to get my choice. I can't say the same for others. Like, and this is right after the, probably right before the initial mask mandate was taken down from being statewide. There is a next door to the O'Tarleys in my neighborhood is a Red Robin. And this is, and my wife and I were still wearing, you know, being obedient slaves, if you want to call it that. We were still wearing our masks, all right? And my son never did the whole time during the pandemic because of his mental issues with it. But we walked in there, we stood in there for 5 minutes and we're like, well, we can't seat you unless you wear a mask, to the table, you know, the 20 to 30 feet from the door to the table. And we just said, okay, we'll go to O'Charley's, see ya. O'Charley's never had that problem. In fact, last time I went in there, now that the statewide mask mandate is gone, O'Charley's, they're not even wearing masks. And I don't care. You know, but businesses are going to fail because of this pandemic and have failed because of this pandemic and will fail because of the continued idiocy of our elected officials' policies regarding both the pandemic and the economy. And a lot of it is just because you're not, the businesses aren't planning for things things that could happen. They're doing inadequate planning for all of it. So anyway, that's all for me. We'll talk to you later.
Okay, well, thank you, Joel. Oop, let me turn that volume down a little bit. There we go. So hand sanitizer? When you were talking about that, I think maybe I've, since this whole thing started and they put the hand sanitizer out, and of course it's just everywhere, or it was, it's maybe not quite as much now, but it was, I've maybe used the hand sanitizer 5 times since this whole thing started. I don't worry about it. Very seldom did I even wear a mask. I have one in my pocket, and I'm sure the thing's filthy. It's not, you know, it's not exactly the same one, but I haven't gone through that many. You know, I really don't believe that they do anything. I'm sorry. And I don't think the hand sanitizer does much. You know, I think if you want to avoid, you know, if you want to avoid catching cold, and it's a virus, you know, the cold virus is a great example. If you want to avoid catching cold from somebody, stand back from them. Don't get right up in their face. You know, and that's been one of the things that I've you know, people aren't doing anymore, is getting right up in each other's face to, you know, have a conversation. That's not happening as much as it once did. You know, and I do find myself kind of standing back from people, like if I'm waiting in a line or whatever. I think that's probably going to continue, and I never really liked being, you know, that close to people anyway, waiting in a line. You know, so I think that's actually probably a good thing that people are giving, you know, now everyone's kind of giving it each, you know, they're giving each other more space. But if I have to walk by someone and get close to them, I'll do it briefly. You know, if I'm walking by, for example. Don't have a problem with that. But as far as my own, because some people have been washing their hands almost obsessively, using hand sanitizer obsessively, switching masks every 5 minutes, you know, which is probably an exaggeration, but in some cases it may not be. You know, I don't know. I don't think that really does it. I think there's a mania that has kind of taken over with some people. And I still see, you know, I still see people wearing masks, although not nearly as many. Somehow the mask is going to save them, or the hand sanitizer is going to save them. But it goes back to the way the human mind works, and we'll continue to talk about this. I don't know that it really has sunk in with many people, but our minds work on really faith. The world itself is way too complicated for us to really grasp it. So therefore, the human mind has to come up, it comes up with working models that are typically based on best behavioral practices that have been passed on for God knows how many years. So we have these behavioral practices that we practice, and we sort of end up utilizing them. You know, so for example, if you've got your car, and typically as long as everything's functioning right and your car is driving down the road, and you don't really think about it. You're not thinking about how the engine works, or you're not thinking about you know, how the thing is working until it, you know, the check engine light comes on, and then you know, uh-oh, I got a problem. Or the air conditioner quits working. And, you know, it's hot. Then you've got a problem. So, but normally you simply have faith that the thing's going to go down the road. And that, you know, I've said this before, you know, like when I'm driving the truck down the road, I just kind of have faith that the thing is going to work. You know, it's going to go down the road, and unless something goes wrong, and then once something goes wrong, then I, you know, then I'll do whatever I have to do in order to rectify the situation. But the world, you know, we largely base our behavior on faith. Faith in certain things are going to work a certain way, and people are going to behave a certain way. And that's largely, a lot of that is based on values. What do we value? What are we able to recognize? And that's literally true even when it comes to something like being able to see the world with your eyes and your brain. You're able to recognize things. Like if you're out driving around, you're able to recognize what the road is. You're able to recognize the signs. You're able to recognize stoplights, other vehicles, etc. You're able to recognize faces, recognize body, you know, human bodies. You're able to recognize insects and animals, etc., trees. And in a very real sense, that depends on what you value. So you can extend that to morals, you know, how we behave. And so if you've got the wrong set of values, or you don't have the right set of values, you don't have the correct set of values, then you end up putting your faith into the wrong things. And that's how ideological possession is able to take hold. That's how ideas are able to take hold of you. And oftentimes those ideas can be wrong. You have a wrong idea about how the world works. A lot of ideas are dysfunctional. And then people can't admit that they're dysfunctional, and so then they believe that the reason that they're not working is because other people don't believe the same way that they do. They don't have the same ideas. I think all of us have this. I have had an idea or have the idea that if I ruled the world, then everything would be perfect. Well, if I ruled the world, I have no doubt whatsoever it would be a dystopian hellhole. And I think that's generally true with any single person tried to rule the world. It would end up being a dystopian hellhole. So we have to have the right set of values in order to be able to successfully function in the world. Got the right set of values, you're able to see which one of the models works the best that you can really put your faith into. And generally speaking, the world works. It's not perfect. But we all, you know, whether someone claims they're an atheist or not, the human mind works on faith. But you can't put your faith in something like science when it comes to things like morality, right and wrong. Science doesn't have anything to say about that. Eventually, you know, science can, you know, scientific method can give you, you know, something like an iPhone or, you know, smartphones, or it can give you computers, and it can give you satellites, and it can give you space travel, and it can give you energy, it can give you, you know, make your car work. But it can't tell you how to behave. Can't tell you what is the proper way to behave. So, but you know, the whole virus thing, you know, I at this point, I've said it before and I'm going to say it again. At this point, I will not take a vaccine. When it comes to any of these vaccines, you know, for COVID, you know, COVID vaccine, I'm not going to take it. Don't care. They can mandate it, try to mandate it all day long. I think the mandates have already fallen flat on their face. It's not going to happen. I'm not going to do it. And the people, you know, the country's under siege, you know, then, well, you know, there's a Bible story that, you know, the thing's under siege, and, you know, and then they try to make a deal with the snake, you know, well, if this, you know, it tells them, well, we'll end the siege if you know, all we have, we'll just scoop out your right eye, and then, you know, and so, you know, they were basically making a deal with the snake. The deal was, well, we'll tear out your right eye, and then you know, and then we'll leave you alone. Well, of course they wouldn't leave you alone. We'll keep you under a siege until you get the jab. Do you think the jab, if everybody gets the jab, then everything's fine? No, then it'll be something else. They'll never leave you alone. Ever. So at some point, you've just got to stand up to it and say, no, it's not going to happen. Don't care. So, but in any case, probably better be getting this put together and uploaded. But I, you know, I did have been kind of thinking about the, you know, what is the difference between keeping busy versus having a meaningful existence? And I just, you know, I find it useful if I can kind of basically explain myself out loud. Sometimes now I could do the same thing in writing, but I really do enjoy, and I enjoy writing, you know, don't get me wrong, but I do enjoy just kind of thinking out loud spontaneously. and it does make it more obvious to me that there is a difference between the idea of just staying busy, as you know, some people think, well, you stay busy, that's meaningful. Well, in my case, you know, I know myself well enough, just staying busy isn't enough. I've got to do something useful. And that really does, in my case, it means doing useful things for other people. And it's not, well, I'm staying busy, or I'm, you know, I'm have a life of leisure or a life of pleasure. It's just that won't cut it with me. Leisure, pleasure are fine in small bites, slices. But a lifestyle it does not make, at least in my case. So, anyhow, hope everyone has had a great week. Hope you have a great weekend coming up. And I will catch you later.
Remember, Trucker Tom is like Visa. He's everywhere you want to be.
Product reviews, restaurant reviews, photos, opinions, and more. Visit Trucker Tom's website at www.truckerphoto.com. You've been listening to Trucker Tom's podcast, and we'd love to hear what you have to say. All you have to do is send us an email to tom@truckerphoto.com.